really looked for travel agents, like different kinds of travel agents to interview and to find out what their real needs were. And for the most part, I was wrong on my assumptions of their needs. Hey there, if you want to get into UX design, freelancing, or into any creative field, really, then you've come to the right place. I'm Sophia, nice to meet you, and in this podcast I share my own journey to becoming a UX freelancer. I share everything as I go through it, so you can learn from my mistakes and be inspired to keep going no matter what, because it will take a lot of hard work, but remember, we're in this together and we can grow much faster if we help each other out and learn from one another. I put out an episode every single Tuesday, and you can join the conversation on Instagram via the polls and the questions that I put out there. And now let's get into this week's episode. Hey there! So finally, after 6 episodes, an episode about UX design. Yeah, this podcast name is The UX Journey, but since I'm just starting out and learning about UX design and taking my first steps into this field, I've been talking more generally about design and freelancing and all that comes with it. But since now I'm halfway through the Google UX design course that I'm taking, I thought it was a good time to give you an update and talk about some of the main takeaways I've had since I started the course. So I started it in November last year, 2021, but I only really started working on it in December because it starts with a really theoretical part and I was getting bored with it, so I just spent November trying to get through that, and then in December I started to really get into it. I went through the introduction, like I said, in November, and then the UX research phase in December, then the ideation and lo-fi prototyping phase in January, and now I'm in the testing phase of the first project, which is, in my case, I decided to design an app, a client management app for travel agents. So I'm now doing my first usability test, and yeah, I thought it was a good time to share some things I've learned in the course and some concepts that stood out to me, how it's different from my graphic design background and also the marketing knowledge that I've acquired doing side projects and stuff. Today I'm going to talk about like specific topics that stood out to me, but next week I will talk more about the course specifically with my very first guest in the podcast. I'm so excited. If everything goes well, it will be in the next episode. She is also learning UX, but comes from a very different background, did a different course, and also has completely different career goals than me. So it should be a really interesting conversation about courses that we took and why we got into UX design. I think it will be really interesting. But yeah, today I'm going to talk about 4 specific topics that stood out to me and that were really mind-blowing for me since I started learning UX design. And the first one is accessibility. I had never really thought about accessibility, like thought about it deeply, until I started this UX course. And something that was really mind-blowing to me, it's the amount of people that live with disabilities. There are a lot of them. There are studies that say that about 15% of the world's population live with some form of disability, and 2 to 4% experience significant difficulties in functioning, so extreme disabilities. But yeah, about 15% live with some form of disability, and I think that's such a large number and such different reality from what I see on the streets and like around me. I kind of get that because actually streets in Portugal are not made for people with motor disabilities to move through them, and public services are also really not prepared for people with disabilities. I think it's such a quiet problem and such a like a problem that you put down under the carpet and you don't want to look at it. I feel like it's kind of that problem here, and it's the first time I really noticed how much these people are excluded. And not only from like public services and the streets and all of that, but also in digital products. For instance, when you create a website for your online business or for your freelance portfolio, you will always think about that standard person that will go through your website, and you never really stop to think that that person can come in many different forms. It can be a man, it can be a woman, it can be non-binary, it can be European, it can be American, it can be Asian, it can be literally anyone. And he or she can have a disability too. And we never stop to think about that. Another thing that was really mind-blowing to me is the concept of disability. There is a vast array of disabilities, not only the main ones that we instantly think of, like motor disabilities, blind people or deaf people. There are a lot of disabilities that can also be temporary or situational. So someone that is carrying a child, for instance, has a temporary disability because she or he can't use that arm that is carrying the child. And if you are in the sun trying to use an app, you might not be able to see clearly because of the bright light that is hitting the screen. That is a temporary disability too. And what I found really fascinating is that features that were designed for people with disabilities actually are helpful for other people too. For instance, subtitles, videos with subtitles were first created to help people that couldn't hear, but now everyone that is at their job or in a situation where they can't just listen to the videos with sound, they use subtitles to be able to understand what people are saying without having to use sound. And the same thing with high contrast mode that was meant for people with visual impairments, but it's also useful for people that are trying to use an app with a bright light hitting the screen. Yeah, now I start noticing all of this stuff, and it's everything is mind-blowing. And the thing that is most mind-blowing to me is how most people aren't aware of it. And another thing was a concept that I already thought about it, but I didn't know what correct names were for it. And it is the concept of equity versus equality. And this concept basically says that we shouldn't treat people equally. We shouldn't treat all people the same way. We should give people access to the same opportunities. We should put people on the same, like on the same step. For instance, the example they use is, if we want someone to see something over a fence and we have people of different heights, we shouldn't give the same bench to each one. We should give a higher bench to the shortest person, so they are all at the same level. And I already had this concept in my mind. I didn't know that it was called equity when I thought about feminism, because I don't have anything against feminism, but there is a trend that is leading feminism to an extreme, trying to, like, saying that women should be treated the same way as men, that they should be equal to men. And in my opinion, it shouldn't be like that. Women should have the same access to opportunities as men, but they are different, so they should be treated differently also. Like, in my opinion, I don't want to get a lot into this because it's a really polemic subject, but in my opinion, we shouldn't, like, force equality between women and men. We should give women the opportunity to be the same or better than men, but we shouldn't, like, force it with mandatory percentages of women in the parliament. Like, it's that, for me, is stupid. We should go to the root of the problem and level the playing field. That's basically one of the big focuses of the course I'm taking, is thinking of equitable design and inclusive design that puts everyone in the same level. That said, I think the course really focused on the theoretical part of this. There are a lot of lessons about it. I'm kind of sick of it now because they are always repeating the same stuff. and they don't teach anything practical. At least until now, I didn't learn anything practical about how to design for screen readers or for other assistive technology, for example. And I also don't know anything practical about how to consider how to create more accessible and inclusive designs. I only know like really theoretical concepts. I know the importance of it, but I don't really know how to apply it. So yeah, I would really like to learn more about it later in the course. The next thing that really stood out to me was UX research or user research. User research, I found, is super, super duper important. And there is a lot going on before starting to sketch or starting to create wireframes. And what I really liked about the course is that it really encourages you to put that into practice. So I did, in the first phase of the research, I did user interviews, like with real people, mostly friends. But yeah, I really looked for travel agents, like different kinds of travel agents to interview, and to find out what their real needs were. And for the most part, I was wrong on my assumptions of their needs. First, I had like an assumption of what a travel agent did and what the day-to-day of them is. There are a lot of different travel agents and they all have different day-to-days. And finding that common ground that brought all of them together was really interesting. And actually, none of them had the exact needs I had envisioned for them or that I had previously thought about including in the app. If I hadn't done this user research, the app would look really different right now and it probably wouldn't be really useful to them. The mind-blowing thing to me was how user research is really important to this process, and also how difficult it is to convince stakeholders that it is this important. Because when I was doing this research part, I was also starting to do this assignment, this project with a client, this small UX project that I actually didn't start it because they had a lot of structural changes in the company, so they couldn't meet with me yet to start it. But I was at the time speaking with them about pricing and about what it would include. And I was trying to convince them to do some user research with their existing client base. And they were just like, oh no, there's no need for it. I trust you. And I was like, I don't trust me. Like, I need to know what users need and what they... Because I'm not the one that is going to use the app. The users are. So I want to know how those specific users will use the app and what will they want the app to have. So I think it's really difficult to convince people that this is really important. But now that I've gone through it, I found that it's really essential. And I mean, if there is not a budget for it, then yeah, you can cut it out. But I found it to be really, really essential to do a good job after I went through it. And I also found that I have many, 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 many biases. One example they used for you to be aware of this was to think about handbags. Who uses handbags and what do they use it for? And the thing is, most people, depending on the culture, of course, but most people will think about women mainly. And most people will think about carrying a wallet or a phone or makeup or documents, something like that. But the truth is, many other people use handbags. Children can use handbags. There are some cultures where it's really common for men to use handbags. And even in cultures where it isn't, some men still use handbags anyway. People use handbags for many different things, like for instance, even to carry small dogs. So yeah, this was really mind-blowing to me, the amount of biases that I have. And I consider myself to be a very open-minded person. So I'm guessing some people have even more biases than me. And it was really mind-blowing and kind of scary. The bad part of this user research part is that the course is really focused on working as a UX designer for a big company where they have budget to do all kinds of studies. They don't really, I mean, they teach you the theoretical part of doing more cost-effective research, but they don't teach you in practice, and they don't give you that option of doing that for your assignment. You do the interviews with real people, and I mean, for a real project, unless you are a big company, you aren't going to have budget to do interviews, like live interviews with people. So yeah, I still have no fucking idea how to do research as a freelancer. But it's like this with everything freelance related. Nowadays, I'm sure there are some courses about how to be a UX freelancer, and they include how to do research. But traditionally speaking, in traditional education, no one really teaches you how to do stuff as a freelancer. So yeah, I'm kind of used to it, so I'm just going to figure it out on my own. But that would be really cool to have some tips on how to do more cost-effective research and how to do research by yourself when you are not like a member of the team, when you are a contractor or a freelancer that was hired just for that project, and also how to convince stakeholders that UX research is important and should be done. The next thing that stood out to me was how UX design and marketing intersect with one another, but are often misaligned. So what do I mean by this? I found out that there are many overlapping concepts in marketing and in UX design, but very different industry standards. Marketing usually puts the business first and sales first, while UX design puts the user first. And I found out that I have issues with both of these approaches. So shouldn't marketeers also put the client first? I think they should, actually. But most marketing concepts are taught in the opposite way. And I'm not saying every marketeer puts sales before first then the user or the client. I'm just saying the standard that is taught is taught in that sense. And in the same way, UX design sometimes puts aside some of the most fundamental marketing principles. At least this course that I'm taking, I got pissed off sometimes because they were saying things that were just like, this doesn't work in business. It's so naive, I thought. I'm going to give you some examples so you can better understand what I mean. So one of the first things I did in the research part of the course was create personas. And personas are a really common concept, a really known concept in marketing. Creating like an avatar of your ideal client so you can imagine it in your head and talk directly to them. But you are really specific. Like his name is John, and he's a 28-year-old man, which is single and lives in X town, and has X, Y, and Z interests, and has these goals, has these needs, he has his day-to-day. You are really specific about what this person looks like. And then you talk directly to that person, because that is your ideal client, and that is the person that you want to attract. The other people that have some things in common with that ideal client will be attracted as well, because of the points in the interests in common that they have, but you are focused on that person so that you have a direction in your communication. This in marketing. In UX design, at least in the course that I did, you create personas for different kinds of users so that you take their needs into account. For instance, people with disabilities. You create a persona with a disability so that when you are creating your product, you are forced to think about how a person with a disability would use your product. And the same thing with other minorities. Create a persona that is a woman, a persona that is a man, a persona that is a non-binary, so you take into account the person that is non-binary while you are creating your forms, for instance, so you have some option for them to select if they don't identify as female or male. They have a non-binary option for them to select there. And you use all of these personas to take into account all the different kinds of users that can use your app. So the goal is really different from the marketing perspective. The goal here is to include more people While the personas in marketing are used to focus your communication to one specific person. I found out that I have issues with both of these approaches, because what about when an MVP, so a minimum viable product, is being launched? Shouldn't it be thought for a specific person so that you don't waste time and resources designing for everyone for it to be inclusive while you don't even know if the product is going to work for your main user? Shouldn't you first design for that main user so that you can validate your idea and then make it more inclusive? Actually, I think they mentioned this in the course. They briefly mentioned that you should do this, but the focus is on just making it inclusive from the start. At least that's the idea that I got from it. But now, on the marketing perspective, what about a business that talks specifically to women or specifically to men? Isn't it excluding other gender, like a non-binary people? A business that talks specifically to Portuguese people, like in the communication they really say Portuguese people, aren't they excluding people that live in Portugal but are not Portuguese? Like they might target Portugal as a country, but there are not only Portuguese that live here, there are other people that live here. I think common sense and also business goals have a very big role to play here. Both marketing and UX could learn a bit from one another, in my opinion. I have issues with both approaches, and I think the best approach will be a little bit of both. I think, and that's actually what I think should happen. Like, both departments should work together in a company, and when you are a freelancer, maybe it doesn't hurt to have a little bit of marketing knowledge if you are a UX designer, and a little bit of UX design knowledge if you are a marketeer. Just my two cents on this one. Oh, another example that I have for you, that, and this was very mind-blowing for me. In the UX course, they talked about a concept that is deceptive patterns. And in a marketing course that I took a while ago, there was a concept called psychological triggers. And what's the difference between these two? Zero. Like, at least some of them are exactly the same. For instance, urgency. When you see a promotion on a website that says, "This promotion expires in 10 minutes, buy now or you won't get a chance again." This is the urgency psychological trigger / deceptive pattern. And for instance, scarcity. So when you are booking flights on Ryanair or on any other company, especially low-cost companies, and you see the little red text saying, "Only one seat left at this price." That is the scarcity psychological trigger / deceptive pattern. Both industries agree that these patterns and triggers should be used ethically and in moderation, but the difference in the names, people. Like, psychological triggers sounds like a tool that you use to get something, but deceptive patterns have such a bad connotation to it, like you are deceiving people and tricking people. And the way they talked about deceptive patterns in the UX course was really kind of saying, convince your stakeholders not to use this. While in the marketing course I took, it was like, don't use this unethically, but make use of this to have more sales. So there's two very different perspectives on the same concepts, and I find it really intriguing how there are two different perspectives of this. And now that I have knowledge of both of them, I tend to fall in the middle. I tend to agree a little bit with both parts, and I think it's really useful for me to have this broad knowledge so that I can make decisions based on both perspectives, based on common sense and business goals also. I think it's very useful for me, and I'm going to move to the last topic, which is UX is much more about feelings than I thought it was. So I first wanted to learn UX design because of the more analytical side of it, so I could balance it out with the creative side of design that I already had. But I learned that empathy and people skills have a big, big, very big role to play in UX design, especially during the research phase. During that phase, we are really encouraged to think about how the user feels while they are using our app, or while they are in the situation where they have the need for the app or the product that we are creating. And during interviews, people skills play also a big part of it, because it's very hard to create empathy with the participant at the same time that, I mean, it's very difficult to create empathy and a relationship of trust with the participant without influencing their opinion. Because if they like you too much, they might not want to criticize your work. They might want to just say stuff that pleases you. But on the other hand, if they don't trust you, then they won't be comfortable sharing their feedback. So it's a very tricky balance to get. And if you are in an international team that interviews participants from different cultures, then it gets even trickier, I imagine, because you have to deal with people from different backgrounds that have different costumes and different standards for what is a nice conversation with a stranger. I think that will be really challenging. And actually, just this experience of interviewing people that I already know was challenging for me, and trying to empathize with what they are feeling and try to uncover the feelings and the thoughts that they have beneath what they say was a really challenging part for me, but I actually enjoyed it more than I expected. I didn't get into UX design because of this part, this feelings part of it and empathy part of it, but I actually kind of enjoyed it. And because it's so challenging for me, it's also really exciting, and I want to keep improving my people skills and my empathy for sure. And yeah, I think that's it for today. Next week I'll talk more deeply about the course, what I thought, and I'll also have a conversation with my very first guest about the course that she did and our goals and what made us want to learn UX design. And yeah, we're gonna have a really interesting conversation about it. And yeah, as always, feel free to share this episode with someone that's learning UX design or that is interested and wants to get into it. If you have any feedback or suggestion, you can get in touch with me via Instagram or LinkedIn. I actually put up polls on Instagram and question boxes, so you can join the conversation so you can also be a part of it. This time I didn't get any responses, but usually I share them in the episode. You just have to follow me on Instagram and you will see the polls and question boxes in the stories. And yeah, see you next week with my first guest. Bye bye.